And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back. Hopefully my voice sounds a little bit better. The last podcast last week, I didn't realize it, but I was coming down with a cold and that shit really sucked. I probably shouldn't swear in the first couple seconds, but that's all right. Yeah, if you get the cold that's going around right now, believe me, it's not any fun. I was pretty sore and achy. I only worked like a half day that day, slept for like 14, 15 hours afterwards. But we're not here to listen to me talk about my cold. I have a pretty cool guest lined up today. I've been following him for a little bit. He followed me after a viral tweet of mine about Tim Pool had kind of made the rounds. And him and I think kind of view the Trump campaign and the Kamala campaign in very, very similar ways. I think there's some stuff we may disagree on when it comes to Trump's purpose and kind of what his stated goals were early on. But I think we probably agree overwhelmingly. And I think his analysis of the Trump campaign currently is probably one of the more spot on ones that I've seen. And the title of the stream being The Emperor's Clothes is very, very due to the conversation and the way that I think him and I are both kind of analyzing this. So I won't keep you guys too much longer here. Make sure you hit all the links below to find my guests, myself, everything I got going on, Tiger Fitness through the links below to get your supplements, get you all jacked and tan, the stuff that I use every day. As well as Fox & Sons Coffee, use code Kyle at checkout, and Deemed Fit, and use code Sarah with an HM at checkout to get a little discount from Deemed Fit Clothing. They got tons of stuff. I know they're just putting out an order soon. We already got a lively chat, so I'm looking forward to getting this conversation on the road. So without further ado, let's go.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
And welcoming to the show, Osiris from Middle MAGA. How you doing, man?
What's good? Thanks for having me, Kyle. I appreciate you, man. I got into metal a little bit because my wife was into metal.
Okay.
And I didn't listen to it a lot
more now.
You said what?
I like you a lot more now.
Oh, yeah. She. I didn't listen to it a lot growing up, but I listened to all kinds of music, and we went to a Pantera concert
in Denver. No way.
Pantera, Lamb of God. Oh. I think it was just them, and it was just crazy.
I know that, yeah. I went and I saw that tour, so I don't want to take over because is me interviewing you, but... My wife is so incredible because we had bought our tickets to go see Metallica and Pantera out in New Jersey. And my buddy Kevin already in the chat. Oh, yeah, this dude rules. Yeah, absolutely already. I'm enamored already. I was enamored before, but I'm definitely enamored now. But so I bought tickets for us to go see Metallica and Pantera out in New Jersey. It was a 2-day thing. So Friday night and Sunday night. So it was Metallica and Pantera Friday and then a couple other bands on Sunday with Metallica. And Metallica or Pantera announced that tour, the tour that you saw coming to Pittsburgh after I already bought my tickets. So I was like, all right, well, we could just cancel our trip and then just go see Pantera because I really only care about seeing Pantera. And she texts me back almost right away and says, well, we could just go to both. I was like, say no more.
Yeah, man, it was a good vibe. I mean, I kind of felt old, I'm not gonna lie. Everybody was about 40-ish plus, but it was great vibes though, man. It was, everybody was on peace, and it was, they had a mosh pit. I'm like, I'm too old for the mosh pit, y'all fooling.
Nice, man. Well, yeah, Pantera is my favorite band in the world, and it's like not the original members. One,
no, oh no, but no.
It's exactly what you said, is the vibe of it, the love in the air, and just the fact that like there's a whole generation of people, myself included, who never got to see Pantera live. And like they grew up listening to Vulgar Display of Power, every single Pantera album. They know every single word front to back, and they never got to see it. And then, you know, two of the guys decided, hey, let's get two guys who fit the bill good enough together, and let's put this on for the fans and for the brothers who are no longer with us. And to me, that was like the most beautiful, wonderful thing ever. I would go see that 100 times over and pay absolutely any price to go see it. So I'm glad that you had a good time. I'm glad you kind of felt the vibe being a little bit on the outside looking in, man.
Yeah, it was cool, man. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. I'm glad we started off there.
There's a lot going on. Yeah.
So, like I said, I entitled the stream The Emperor's Clothes because I think you and I are both kind of analyzing the political chessboard, so to speak, in a very, very similar way. But the Trump campaign has really been, I've been saying it, and people are kind of coming around to it, but they haven't quite come around to it. But it's being like low energy Jeb vibes, where it's just kind of rambling through the speeches and then talking about how everything would be better under Trump, but there's no real plan laid out. So, why don't you lay out your history with, you know, maybe supporting Trump and then now where you're at currently?
Yeah, I started out on the left like many others. A lot of people use the term default Democrat. I think Andrew Breitbart was the first I heard use that. Just you grow up and you're just Democrat. And Republicans are kind of like corporate, you know, you don't even know they're both corporate, but you're just a Democrat. Right. Then the pandemic hit and I liked Bernie. I like the energy from Bernie. 2016 was one of the best years of politics with Bernie and Trump during the primaries. That was the populist energy. And I liked both of them. I liked a lot of Bernie. I liked a lot of Trump. But I still didn't know who I was politically.
Sure.
And as time went on and I started my channel, it started out as Stuck in the Middle because I liked both of them. Yeah. And a lot of people did. There was a lot of people who went from Bernie to Trump. Mm-hmm. And then I slowly found out who I was, and I'm a populist, meaning I advocate for power to be redistributed from centralized institutions to as many people as possible. I don't care if you're black, white, gay, whatever you are, take the power from the centralized, whether it's Google, whether it's the government, and distribute it to as many people as possible. I think that's the answer for peace. Mm-hmm. And so I became a populist, and I was like, wait, but MAGA is the energy in the populist movement. And I was leaning more that way. So I said, I'm middle MAGA. Not because I'm a moderate. I hate the moderate. Mm-hmm. I like some of the Jimmy Dore and I like some of the Bannon. I'm not in the mid, I'm in the middle only because I like some of each. I'm not like halfway. So that's where I became. And then Trump was the face of it. And I was never a Trumpist. Mm-hmm. Always appreciate Trump. I'm not against Trump, but I like the movement, the people. And that's how we got to the point where right now I mean, Trump's a political enemy of mine. And I still like him. I'm so grateful for him. But right now he's not where I need him to be.
Yeah, I really like that perspective. And I like this whole Groiper War thing that's going on right now. And I know you've had a lot of kind words to say about it, but I actually watched Fuentes' stream where he announces Groiper War. And like, I've always thought he was some kind of like, you know, twank, some ridiculous dude who had retarded ideas. But the more I got exposed to him, and then especially after listening to the stream just today, I'm like, you know, he actually has some really good points. And, you know, people have kind of told me for a while now, and I refuse to vote Trump. I'm not voting this election because I just don't like any of these options. And I mean, I voted Libertarian for the last couple elections because I at least kind of like their, but I mean, Chase Oliver is just, that's not remotely anybody I could support.
No.
But everybody's been trying to tell me basically, oh, you just need to hold your nose and support Trump because of, you know, all the good that he does. But I'm like, I can't get over 2020. I'm sorry, but if you give Fauci an award, I can't get over that. I can't forgive that. So, and then, you know, we're talking about how he's supposed to end the war in Ukraine, but he kind of put a lot of the footwork in to make sure that that happened. And then, you know, it was even advocating for support, you know, sending money over to Ukraine more recently. And then the Israel stuff, like you've pointed out, he's just all in on Israel to the point that, you know, hey, you know, everybody who disagrees with me on Israel is a Palestinian. So I just can't support that. And I understand why people do. It's lesser of two evils. And there are some good things that come from Trump. But it just feels like, once again, we're at this point of, you know, the emperor has no clothes, but we're just supposed to believe that, you know, all the stuff that Trump did in the past doesn't matter. And like, it's going to be different this time around. But I can't believe that.
Yeah, he hasn't evolved. He's regressed from he came down the escalator, I believe it was summer of 2015. Mm-hmm. He came down the escalator, and the movement should be like evolved into like a altered beast. I'm dating myself, a video game where you get the pill and you up and you go, and then you get stronger. Yeah. Like Hulk Hogan, you know, not Hulk Hogan, the Incredible Hulk or something like that, where you know, Bruce Banner, you kind of get up, and mm-hmm. it's not where it needs to be. And I saw a lot of problems from the beginning. He's just too old. I mean, we just have to start there. I mean, I could still support him even with his age. But when you look at that, you start from that, then you go down and you look at, okay, he was bad on the pandemic, but he could still have a good take on it now. His take mm-hmm. hasn't evolved on the pandemic. Not and he's all. Gotten, he got feedback from an interview Candace Owens did with him in 2021, where mm-hmm. she was like, wait a second, what are you talking about? People don't like this. And he really never evolved that take. So then you go to loans to Ukraine. He's for mm-hmm. money to Ukraine. Then you go to the war in the Middle East, and then now you have the bad personnel choices, and it's just too much to overcome, and there's not enough good there for me.
Yeah, I think that's a completely understandable position. And you know, in 2016, I sometimes look back at that, and I voted Gary Johnson that election, but you know, kind of hindsight being what it was, and had I been a little bit more politically aware at the time, I probably would have supported Trump back then, because the message was correct. I mean, yep. There's a really great Peter Schiff video where basically Peter Schiff lays out how Trump was, you know, before he got elected to when he got elected, where he was absolutely right. Hey, low interest rates, this is the reason why the economy's, you know, looks as good as it does, because artificially low interest rates kind of give everybody the impression that there's more money available than there actually is. And, you know, you can basically pay money back, same as cash. So companies are buying back their stock to artificially inflate, you know, the whole economy. Yep. And he said, yeah, if you raise rates, you're going to pop the bubble. He was 100% right. The war stuff, he's right about that. He was right about so much, but then it was so weird because as soon as he got in, flipped. Oh, this is the greatest economy ever. And it's almost frustrating, because when you try to talk to people about this, it's like, oh, the only reason why Trump's economy looked so good and it felt good legitimately is because artificially low interest rates, and we got further away from Obama's, you know, disastrous, you know, when the housing bubble collapsed in 2008. So of course you have 8 years of recovery. By the time you get to 2019, which all signs point to recession, even without the pandemic, of course things look good. But then the pandemic came along and that bubble went pop.
Yeah. And he went towards the, I got to spend. And, but I don't even knock him for that in the moment. It was difficult. The pandemic.
Sure, absolutely.
Afterwards, we have hindsight. We can, mm-hmm. we can play Monday morning quarterback now. And he never really attacked Fauci as far as like politically. Fauci undermined him the whole time. Mm-hmm. Trump at one point said, hey, you guys are opening up too quickly, to Brian Kemp. And he can say now, I was wrong. It's okay. Right. And he can say they tried to set me up, just like they tried to off me. Or, you know, he can say, though, he's not saying any of that stuff. Okay. I mean, you look around, it's just confusing. He took a graze to his ear, and it's almost like he doesn't care. He was on the X space with Elon. And he didn't bring up anything about, Elon was the one bringing up, well, who do you think did this? A little bit of that. Trump doesn't do any of that. He said the FBI did a great job investigating. Doing a great job investigating? This is a disaster. Right. So I don't know what's happening. He looks to be compromised or something else. I don't know. But we have to push politicians to be what they are. Mm-hmm. That we have to. Because he's taking money from other people. So if the people don't push him, he's going to listen to whoever's giving him the money.
Right, absolutely. And I think we see that playing out through the Adelson family and a little bit of the PayPal mafia stuff, which I kind of want to get into. But I think what you said there kind of ties back into this whole Groyper War thing. Mm-hmm. So what was your opinion on the Groypers when you first kind of heard of them?
I didn't know anything about them. And I heard the, you know, typical stuff that everybody said, like they made him sound like he was the most ominous, funny mustache. They made him sound like he was the new dude with the funny mustache, like he was the one. I think that's kind of for somebody like me, that's a mistake, because I'm going to have to figure out who is this dude. So then I look at him and I'm like, he's literally 80 pounds soaking wet. So, you know, he's not a physical threat.
Yeah.
So I'm looking like, is he talking violence? Never talked violence ever. Never heard him talk violence. There's a quote where he says something, we're in a holy war. He's talking about, like how I say, we're in an informational war. He's not talking about like real war. No, so he's not a physical threat. He's not talking violence. Then they're scared about his ideas. So what are these ideas? I'm not scared of anybody's ideas. Mm-hmm. So I just watch his show. It was right around AFPAC 3. Mm-hmm. So I start watching his show. And I'm like, this is what they're talking about? This dude's just talking politics. He's like just a great political talking head. Then you do throw in some stuff other people aren't willing to talk about, especially because he was banned. He's talked about it. He went a little bit more radical. He believed what he said, but he went more radical with Israel and other things like that. But nothing crazy. He does some off-color jokes or whatever. I think he's hilarious. He's the best political commentator I've ever heard. So then I started chatting with the people. The Groypers are just the people in his chat, basically, and on Gab. This is before he came back. And I never had a problem with them. They knew I was black. I had on my profile picture I was black. It was never a problem. They throw around the N-word just playfully. I never had one problem with a Groyper. So I don't know if it's just me. I chat with a ton of them. And I love the Groyper War. The Groyper War is the American spirit. It's taking control of politics. You don't control us. We can move you. And here's the controversial part. And I want to hear what your take is on, like, sure. Have you gotten into them? Is the controversial part is this race thing. So they believe that the best way to save this country is to prioritize young, white, Christian, Catholic males into power. And I have no problem with that. The country was founded by mostly white Christian males. If that's his prerogative, that's his prerogative. I don't have a problem with that. And everybody's fighting for that. I want my group to have control of all three branches and all of that. And he's not calling for violence or anything like that. He's not even calling for like a violent takeover. He's saying doing it through the process.
Right.
I want that to happen. So I'm all for that. That's the American spirit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I originally, with some of this race stuff, I understand why people have an immediate revulsion to it, because I think when you start going extreme and you start saying, oh, well, you know, the J's this, the J's that, then people are like, okay, well, you're starting to sound like the Tiny Mustache Man when you speak in generalities about race. But, you know, when it comes to just, you know, this country is a largely white Christian nation. I mean, you know, the vast majority of Americans here identify, I think it's 70% of Americans identify as Christians. I mean, I'm a white, married, blue collar dude. You know, I work on cars. My wife's an EMT. So, I mean, I would like to believe we're kind of in this general constituent of, you know, your average Joe American. So, I think he's trying to play more to those kind of people. And really, that's kind of the base of the Trump movement, is largely blue collar white guys in small towns and rural areas. I mean, I live in, you know, the suburbs of Pittsburgh, sort of. I mean, I'm about 45 minutes north of Pittsburgh, but regardless, I mean, you know, this is all Steel City, right? So, you know, largely these areas outside of Pittsburgh all voted for Trump. I mean, I go to take my dogs for a walk in the morning and I see dozens of Trump signs every time I go for a walk, and there's a farm, you know, 5 minutes that way, a mill down over the hill. So, I mean, this is largely the people who voted for and support Trump. But, you know, the problem with the race stuff is that because it's such a toxic conversation, we can't have a conversation about it. So, you know, when you are Nick Fuentes and you're saying, hey, I want to have people who look like me and share my values in positions of power, then people immediately think, okay, well, you're saying screw all black people, screw Latina, screw every other race but white people. But it's not even necessarily that. It's just, hey, I'm, you know, a white person. I have preference for white people the same way as, you know, Jewish people have a preference for Jewish people. People generally prefer people who look like them and who are, you know, feel more familiar to them. And I think that's generally what Fuentes' thing is. And once again, I don't agree with everything that he says, but, you know, if you shove them to the darkest corner of the internet, then don't be surprised that it festers in ugly and awful ways.
Yeah, I think I'm more harsh than Nick. I'm more harsh than Nick. He's very soft. The things that people get upset about are 90% of the things that people get upset about are the jokes. He tells he's hilarious, but he tells some, you know, off color jokes.
Yeah.
In 2020, you see different figures anywhere from 90 to 94% or 87 to 94% from via the exit polls that blacks voted for Joe Biden. What do you want me to do? I don't associate with that.
Right.
That and the way they view black is socially. And the way Nick talks about black is race realism. That's real stuff. That's a real conversation. The way that the in politically terms, Kamala Harris, what is she, 12% black at most? Mm-hmm. She's half Indian. Her father has all kinds of different heritage and maybe a little bit of black in him from Jamaica. My parents are Jamaican. Yeah. I was born here. But she's considered black. So Trump goes to the National Association of Black Journalists, mm-hmm. and he says, he doesn't even say a strong statement. He just says, when did Kamala Harris become black? Fair question. The journalist Rachel Scott, this is exactly what she said. Trump was talking. They had a back and forth. It was hard to hear. She said she identifies as black. What the hell does that mean? And then she said she went to an all-black college. So there's a educated black woman. National journalism says she's black because she went to a black college and she says she's black. Mm-hmm. I'm open up. I am completely open now to say I am whatever that is. I'm not associating with it. And I'm perfectly fine with that. And think about it from the Trump standpoint. Mm-hmm. Why is he trying to appeal to that group? Why? Right. 90% of them vote for the Democrats. Who are you trying to appeal to? You got to get to your base. If you do that without saying white, fine. Then don't say black. But if you're saying black, then you're going to have to say white. I want to, with your thought on this, I don't want to take it off of where you want to talk about, but the immigration thing.
Yeah,
I'm not happy with his present. He's saying he's trying to sound radical without being radical. I'm going to deport them all. We're going to do the largest deportation this country's ever seen. How are you going to do that? That's right. You can't. How do you even do that? I don't even know how you logistically do that. So I want to hear more of, if we don't stop this, that's what build the wall was. Let's stop it. If we don't stop this, we're the UK. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? And when it comes to the immigration stuff, I'm not quite as hawkish as some other people are. Mm. I have some friends who say that immigration is the number one issue. And I understand where they're going with this. And I'm somewhat in favor of building a wall. But I really think what you have to do is kind of go to the incentives and, you know, discuss that. So like for me, foreign policy is always number one. So if you quit destroying people's homes and then quit giving them the incentives to come here, then you're probably going to reduce immigration that way. Because once again, where are we getting a lot of immigrants from? We're getting them from Mexico. We're getting them from the Middle East. And what have we done over the last, you know, couple decades? We've set the Middle East completely on fire through sanctions, through war, through genocide, through, you know, you name it over there. And we've done it. And then Mexico, you know, with the CIA, drug running, the drug war, and all these stuff, we've really ruined these countries. So what are they going to do? They're going to look at our country and say, well, they're not doing that there. So we should just go there because guess what? All this stuff isn't happening there. So it's reasonable, you know. So I understand why people want to stop immigration. And I do too, especially at the rate that we're going right now. But I think you're putting a Band-Aid on a snake bite if you're just saying, well, we're going to make laws to deport people, but you're not going to strike at the heart of the issue, which once again, in my opinion, is foreign policy, which is partially creating the incentive to do this. I want to get this chat and I'll throw it back to you. But if everyone, thank you, Abrogate D's, been a member for a couple months. If everyone started noticing, I don't think a tiny island in the Middle East could continue controlling our disastrous foreign policy. But that kind of rounds up my comment as well, is that once again, if we quit destroying people's homes, then they're probably going to want to stay there a lot more than they're going to want to come here.
That's where the left is better. That's why I like to talk to people, libertarian and left and all different sides. The MAGA side is bad on that. I don't know if they'd understand it. The problem with that is that it's more of a long term, like there's no quick solution for that. So I think that's part of the problem, but they don't fundamentally understand it. The only people that I talk to that say that kind of stuff, Matt Gaetz has, but most of them are on the left. Mm-hmm. Like political, not like the Kamala Harris where we say she's on the left.
More
she's
the dissident left. You're Jimmy Dore, my friend Misty Winston, the guys from the Revolutionary Blackout Network.
Oh, Misty's great. Oh, you like RBN too? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, both Nick and Sabby have been on the show. And I
love those guys. Wow, I'm in great company. Wow.
Yes.
Because when I started streaming, I looked up to those. Nico House was the first streamer that I ever kind of was like, you know, Nico, yeah. And then the Convo Couch, Pasta, and Fiorella, just amazing journalists.
I love Pasta. He's a good friend of mine, yes.
Great guy. Great guy. So that whole thing, and then RBN too, even though they're way more race-focused than me, other than that, I mean, we are lockstep. Sebi Sabs is a beast.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that whole section of the left. And this is kind of where I also part ways with, like, I consider myself more of like a dissident right libertarian now at this point, where I used to consider myself like an anarcho-capitalist libertarian a few years ago. I kind of moved to my position just a little bit. But I don't like it when people say, oh, it's just the left versus the right, because can you really consider Sabby Sabs and the guys from RBN in the same camp as Kamala Harris?
No. Can. Oh, gosh, no. Oh, it's just, it's bad terminology. Right. Corporate may be better. Kamala's as corporate as Mitch McConnell.
Right.
It's hard to explain. But here's where the bigger problem is. And I think, I don't know, I don't think she blocked me. I think she unfollowed me. Sabs, I'm still a big supporter. But we clash when it comes to race. I mean, we just do. And they're having that problem with the countries over there, because now Kamala's up to the top. And then now all the blacks are meant to go get on board, even though she is not where they need to, they want her on the war over there.
Yeah, it's the metaphorical, once again, Democratic plantation, where because you're black, you're supposed to support Kamala.
And I chat with them. I'm saying the problem is your philosophy, man. Why do you value this skin color like we are on the same team because of it? That's how they're able to use that. They don't fall into it, but the whole group does. And that's really the dividing line. As sad as it is, there's other things too, as spending probably. They love to spend money. Spending and race are probably the biggest things that kind of keep us like, okay, you're on the populist left. But there's a lot of things Bannon says that they would like. Mm-hmm. So it's tough. I've given up in trying to say, oh, let's get together. But could you imagine if we put our resources together, we would have to throw away race and some other things and actually kind of formed a kind of coalition. You could call it MAGA left or right, or rebrand it, but that's how I see the kind of the org chart. You've got the populists, and then you got the left, and then the right, and the left and the right, they don't really mess with each other when they agree on a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the beautiful things about kind of talking to this coalition of people, and my buddy Abrogate, I really appreciate that you're capable of coalitioning on foreign policy and war con, make all the friends you can. Nothing is more important. Yeah, I completely agree with that. But much of that point, I really didn't talk to too many like left-wingers until I started getting on Twitter and started hearing about these different shows. So like, you know, Media Roots Radio, RBN, Misty, and I'm forgetting some other people. But I mean, there are a lot of great left-wingers that I agree with a lot on. And, you know, they're really the best guys on foreign policy. And, you know, where the populist right kind of falls down is on China, Iran, and South America. Because, I mean, you know, let's face it, the Democrats' project since 2011 has been the war with China. I mean, that has been the pivot to Asia. We started under Barack Obama. Trump accelerated it. Biden stomped the gas on it. And one of my biggest concerns about, you know, supporting any right-wing candidate right now is that they're all on board. I mean, they sound like fucking neocons back in the early 2000s when they talk about Iran and China. And like, look, we don't need to fight a war with them. China's going to fall apart by themselves. They have major demographic problems. Their economic situation isn't sustainable. And like Iran being a threat, they make like 2% of our GDP. Like, you think if we got back into the Iran deal, they would probably stop, you know, enriching uranium at the percentage that they are right now, because they're at like 63%. Under the Iran deal, they had to stay under 3%. And that was one of Trump's biggest brags. Hey, you know, I was so hard on Iran. Really? Well, now, you know, if you're concerned about them making a nuke, I'm not. They're not going to. They have no intentions to. Then keep staying in the Iran deal kind of kept that under balance, but basically he wanted to get out of it because he wanted to, you know, pat, you know, the Adelson family on the back and tell them, hey, look at what I'm doing for you. I'm enriching Israel this much. It's about securing, you know, the clean break, right? Securing the realm for Israel.
Yeah, and I think that I had to make a progression because I was I was like, you know what, I'm anti-war. Believe it, this was my old position. Not that long ago. I mean, maybe 2.5, 3 years ago. I'm anti-war, but if China invades Taiwan, we have to protect it. It sounds asinine now, but I had to go through that progression to say, wait a second, why? Because of the chips and all that. No, that's not an excuse. I'm anti-war. Yeah. And I kind of fell into that. So you can see how I separated from Trump, because that was just over the last couple of years. Yeah. And Trump has actually regressed, and I've gone a different way. Not that one way is better than the other, but we're in different ways. So we're kind of parting ways. And you look at Nick, with the Groyper War, there's nothing about that tiny country in it. In the demands for the Groyper War.
Exactly, yes.
Nothing. It's about ending the wars. It's about changing out his campaign people, basically, and being non-interventionist. That's it. That's the only demands.
Right, right. So, you know, I kind of want to go back to the race stuff, because I don't get to talk about this a lot because it's such a caustic subject. But, you know, people kind of start raising their eyebrows a little bit. So where did you kind of start with the race stuff? And do you kind of dive into race and IQ? What's your kind of thoughts about race and the race discussions?
I think they're great discussions. That is the discussion we need to have as a country. I mean, and if anybody, the populist, I just call them the populist left, like we were talking about in right, we need to have a just hash out that race thing. Because Fred Hampton was able to bring together, I mean, the original rainbow before it became something else, literally got people together who you would call white supremacists or whatever, together and say, wait a second, we got a common goal and we can't do that now. But the race conversation is broken down, and I've talked to some great people on this. There's a guy, I don't know if you know Iggy Ignoramus, just a brilliant streamer, journalist. And we talked to, he helped me formulate my thoughts here. You have race realism, like real discussions. I'm not an expert there with the IQ stuff and all that. I've heard Nick talk about it. I've heard Bryson Gray talk about it. I'm not an expert there. I think there's something to it. But and then the violence part of it, I don't know if there's something to it either, but I think it's worth talking about. But you have that's race realism. They're trying to say, I believe, like it's genetic or something like that. But then you have the social stuff. That's the toxic stuff. That's why there's no organic situation where 94% of people vote in the same. You couldn't get 94% of people in a room to agree on pizza. Right. You know, some people don't eat pizza. 94 out of 100 people. Yeah. You don't?
I do not. No See? Cheese.
So how there is no way to explain that other than the race conversation needs to happen. A lot of them are looking for reparations, and that's the weakness that I think foreign countries use in America when they go do propaganda. That's what happened with back in the day, Occupy Wall Street, Occupy One, the original one.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like a right or left thing. It was like, you know, we're just bucking the system, Wall Street. And then race came in. Then it was like, well, I'm a black woman and my voice needs to be heard. And it's like, wait, what? And I mean, you can have your voice heard, but that's not a good reason. And then it just falls apart. So Dave Smith talks about that a lot. Mm-hmm. Comic Dave Smith. And I think
he's been on the show before.
Oh, wow. Wow. Wow, that's great, man. That's great. He's in my pinned profile since 2021, July, is supporting Comic Dave Smith for president. Obviously, he didn't run, but it's just to show that's the prototype for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more. Him and I pretty much, I really don't think there's anybody in the political sphere that I agree with more. And he raises up some of my really, really good friends, the guys from antiwar.com, Connor Freeman, Kyle Anzalone, Dave DeCamp. All those guys are very, very good guys. And if you're looking for anything foreign policy, those are my go-to guys 100% of the time because they know everything. They're like fucking encyclopedias with that shit. Yeah. And of course, Scott Horton and Patrick McFarlane, Keith Knight, all the guys from Libertarian Institute and antiwar.com. But, you know, like I said, it's sad because we should be able to have a conversation about race. And when you look at different crime rates and you know, the way that they may vote and the way that things kind of happen amongst different demographics. There's something going on there. And I'm not saying it's specifically because race or specifically because IQ, but, you know, if we can't have a conversation about it, how can we, you know, potentially fix this or how can we address it? But instead, you know, now you get people saying, oh, well, you know, you're canceled. You can't do this. You can't put research into that. You know, you're a racist for this conversation. And then once again, it festers in awful, terrible ways instead of people just being able to fucking have a, you know, logical conversation about, hey, you know, like even when we look into bodybuilders and the way that different people kind of who come from all over the world, you know, their way their muscles may insert or the way that, you know, certain physiognomies may develop. I mean, that shit's kind of important. So, you know, like there's a couple different, I think three different prototypes for physiques for bodybuilders, you know, one for Black people, one for Asians, and then one for your, you know, like standard European white male. Okay, well, each person is going to have a different ability according to that, you know, basically physiognomy. Well, I mean, it's not racist to point that out. It's just the truth.
No, I mean, there's a reason why I have melanin. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. I mean, there are real reasons for this. I don't know why we as adults can't have adult conversations. We often act like children. And yeah. I thought the evolution of Trump would be Vivek, just to bring up Vivek Ramaswamy.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the friends of the shows that I stream with goes by Might Be Wrong. He made such a great point. He said Vivek Ramaswamy was such a hellfire in a good way during the primary. Just mm-hmm. absolutely.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the My Lowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Amazing. That we almost gave Trump credit for that. Mm-hmm. It was like Vivek was the natural evolution of Trump, where I would expect Trump to be closer to. Still vitriolic, but yeah. more targeted with the purpose and mm-hmm. always challenging power. And not yes. and not afraid of race, not afraid to go at it, but that wasn't where Trump was, and it was almost like maybe it was just me, but it felt like it was more than just me. Gave Trump credit for Vivek's takes almost.
Yeah, I think I see where you're going, and I actually largely agree. Vivek, I love the energy and passion, and I don't agree with him on some things, but you know he definitely had the presence, and he was kind of the Trump. You know, maybe even to another degree from like 2016. And this is what I think you and I notice about Trump 2016 and now is that, you know, in his debates, he's like low energy, just kind of talks through it and, you know, drill, baby, drill. And, you know, we're going to make America great again. We're going to build an Iron Dome over America, which like we're fine. We'll be fine without an Iron Dome. We don't need to spend any more money. You know, let Israel have theirs. We're done paying for it. But like America doesn't need one. We have two oceans on the side of us. And anybody that wants to come near here will get their brains blown out in an instant. So we don't need an Iron Dome for America. Let's just focus on rebuilding infrastructure. Bring all our troops home. Put them on the fucking borders. And let's fucking just focus on that. No more Iron Dome. No more bullshit. You know, but, you know, the Trump campaign has really been about trying to pander to people who really, like you said, don't vote for him. So if you're trying to pander to people who aren't going to vote for you, then what are you doing? Why don't you play to your base? You know, once again, your average white guy who works a blue collar job, who, funny enough, the last shop I worked at, I worked with one of Trump's biggest donors in Pennsylvania, and he was an average fucking mechanic that drove a leased truck back and forth, you know, from a real small town right outside of Monroeville. You know, 7-8 mile drive every day, wearing a work uniform every single day, putting a, you know, dip in every single morning. Mm-hmm. He had the Make America Great Again hat. He'd wear it, you know, back and forth to work. He had the Trump, you know, Christmas ornament, all that kind of stuff. That's who his base is. Why don't you appeal to those people rather than, like you said, you know, blacks who 94% vote for Democrats? If they're going to come along to vote for Trump or vote Republican, they're going to do it whether you pander to them or not. Like, I don't think it matters.
Yeah, this wider tent has really pissed me off, and we saw it in the RNC. Trump is supposed to be the kingpin of this party, and the wider tent included neocons.
Yes.
And people who never, who don't even know what the term MAGA really is. Right. But the beauty of the movement to me when it started was it was the energy of the person that you just spoke about. Mm-hmm. That wasn't, it wasn't like exclusive to that person. So you had that energy, basically your average working man. But, mm-hmm. you know, you can target to white male. That the Democrat Party just completely ignored, called deplorables, and Trump was able to say what they wanted to say but couldn't say or didn't have the ability to say or the time to say. And he was the Michael Moore said he was the Molotov cocktail, figuratively, political Molotov cocktail to throw into D.C. to say, this ain't working. I got to do my 9-to-5 every day. I don't know all the ins and outs, but I know something ain't working. And this guy is going to do that. But the problem is now you don't have that focus. So now the focus is just what I did for this group, what I did for that group. And mm-hmm. I went to the Bitcoin conference and I went to the Libertarian. And I actually like going to these different conferences, but I'm going to throw it back to you after this one.
Yeah.
The big problem is you look at Nick. Nick did this Groiper War too. Mm-hmm. And he has a literal mission statement for it. It says right. No new wars. The United States must avoid involvement in any new conflicts. End mass immigration, whether anybody agrees or disagrees. It's all out here. The movement demands an end, like a moratorium, complete moratorium on it. Mm-hmm. And then personnel changes in the Trump campaign. That's it. But my point is, what is Trump about? He doesn't make America great again. America first, and there's no specifics. So you can't hold him accountable to anything. Nick Holt puts that mission out. That makes you vulnerable. Because if you don't stick to that, then I can go and say, what's going on, Nick?
Yeah.
And Trump doesn't stick to that. Why? Because Susie Wiles, these are his campaign people, they want a wider net. Elon Musk, he did the thing with Elon Musk. It's palatable for Elon Musk to support Trump. Trump said Zuckerberg supported him. Why? Because Trump doesn't stand for anything. That's why they can support him.
Yeah, I mean, it's really what Trump has always done is basically play all sides of every issue so that way he could always be right. And you see his sycophants, you know, the Hodge twins, Jack Posobiec, you know, whoever, Tim Pool even, will always, always, always run to his defense and say that he's right about this issue for this reason or another. And like the whole Ukraine thing where he had no plan, but I even see libertarians, guys who are, you know, as smart as me on foreign policy, saying, oh yeah, he'll end the war on day one. With what? What's his plan? When asked to lay out his plan, he said, oh yeah, I'll tell Ukraine, I'll give them more than they've ever gotten if Russia doesn't stop. Like, your plan to end the war is to do exactly what made it start? Are you fucking kidding me? And people are still eating this up. But like you said, you can't hold him accountable. He laid out this 20-point plan, but literally like no designation, no expansion upon how he's going to do any of this. And then when pressed on it, I hate to say it, but he kind of does a Kamala on a lot of this stuff where he can just kind of, you know, ramble his way out of actually having any kind of answer on anything. Like you brought up how he did an interview with Candace Owens and Candace pushed him a little bit, but Candace still likes Trump way too much to really, you know, apply any pressure. But then, you know, on the Julian Assange stuff, he completely caved on that. And then, you know, it was under his administration that Julian Assange was plotted to be assassinated via Mike Pompeo. And then when Megyn Kelly interviewed him, he lied about giving Trump the award, or Trump lied about giving Fauci an award. Mm-hmm. So, like, what the hell are you doing? But like you said, much to Nick's credit, if you have a definable goal and like he's saying, hey, you know, we're going to do these streams, we're going to analyze how it's going, what's going on, if it's going good, if it's going bad, but these are our goals and we're not going to stop until we get something. Like, where has this been? And people look at me like I'm an asshole when I call Trump out for being what he is, but like, how, what else are we supposed to do? He's just supposed to say, oh yeah, well, you know, he's lesser two evils, he's not Kamala, so we'll just vote for him, you know. But once again, what do we get? Where is the people's voice? And Nick, much to his credit, has said, I'm going to be speaking on behalf of the American people. No more wars, no more immigration. Get these fucking people out of the Trump campaign and let's put some real people in there. So I congratulate him for it. I don't see a downside to it.
Absolutely. And Michael Tracy had a post on X earlier where he said something to the effect of, they're always trying to push Trump, but maybe the problem is Trump. And He's like, he's saying they're trying to push Trump, but the people on the right, they never realize that the problem is the guy on top, Trump. And I'm like, what is the point of that? Trump is, I can't undo where he is now. Trump has a brand name like Nike. I went to the outlet store the other day, felt like the 90s. I don't go shopping a lot. Uh-huh. But the Puma store was actually, to me, doper than the Nike store. But there's like 10 people in the Puma store, and there's like 100 people in the Nike store. Nike has the brand. I can't snap my finger and say, oh, the brand's gone. And maybe I don't even want to do that. It'd be better to make the store what I want it to be if I can push it that way. Sure. And there's no downside to it. There's no down. And the take is anti-war. So I see no downside to it. On Ukraine, Trump does peace through strength, which I actually agree with. You gotta be able to defend yourself. You gotta be able to say, sometimes you have to be able to say, I like the libertarian philosophy of non-aggression, but that doesn't mean you don't say, if you mess with me, I'm gonna F you up. Of course. So, but that's all he knows, because if he really wanted no war with the sunflower country and Russia over there, he would have said, Ukraine, you get nothing. As soon as I get in, all that money gone. Mm-hmm. It's done. It's over at that point. I don't care if Russia had the ability to take over all of Ukraine, I'd be like, go ahead and do it. It ain't got nothing to do with me. I don't care. So that's what we would have wanted to hear. Now, before, when they impeached him, he was trying to do the peace through strength. He had to send the weapons over there. I don't think we have a self-interest in there, but that's not war necessarily. Mm. So you have to slowly try to kind of decrease defense spending to cut that out. Mm. But the larger part, you brought up the 20-point plan. Mm. The larger point is I need a philosophy in which to analyze all those different points in.
Sure.
And I don't know what that is. And there's a lot of points in there, which is good, but I don't know if you need that many points nowadays. Kamala doesn't even have policies on, literally, last I checked, no policies on our website. So why do you need a 20-point plan? Who's working for you? So I don't think you need to really do a 20-point plan. I think you need to have a more concise plan, because you can't talk about all 20 points. So I think that's where, and he, you know, for example, I'm going to leave with, he's kind of scatterbrained.
Yeah.
He goes into the the conference call, the X Spaces with Elon, mm-hmm. and there's no purpose to it. Like, there's no theme to it. Like, I'm going to knock Kamala on all these different things. No, he barely talked about her. He talked about it a little bit in the middle. Barely talked about the difference between him and Kamala. Mm-hmm. What's your plan going into these type of things? He didn't talk about J6ers. Why? It's literally one of his 20 points. One of his 20 points is stop the weaponization of the federal government, DOJ. Well, what represents that more than J6ers, the common person who got entrapped? We all know they got entrapped.
Right.
And we got to focus on getting him where we need him. That's not a bad thing. That's not even being against him.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I've said that Trump has kind of taught the right, the progressive lesson, which basically you support your candidate at all costs. Even if he's dead set against your principles, you support them. And that's really the way progressives have been. And that's why they've been so successful over, you know, decades and decades and decades. But, you know, Trump kind of had in 2016 this cultural push behind him. And it was more like back in the day, you know, the right really didn't have a cultural representation. Like, you could argue Ron Paul a little bit, but I mean, Ron Paul wasn't the front runner of the party, unfortunately. I mean, you know, I wish he was. I was lucky enough to interview him for the 300th episode of the show. I absolutely love the doctor, but unfortunately, it wasn't his time. It should have been, but it wasn't. But Trump, I think, really was able to kind of step off, you know, stand on the shoulders of giants, so to speak, and then build a cultural movement behind him, which is what the right needed. But though, like you said, now there's no kind of guiding ideology behind it. And 20 points, like you said, that's a lot to kind of talk about. But, you know, it just seems like every single time he gets like a political win, he just fumbles the ball. Like, the Joe Biden debate, yeah, he made it through, but I mean, there's just like so many opportunities that he has to, you know, do something. Like, you know, after you got assassinated, or you know, there was an attempt on your life, you could have said, we're going for blood now. They came after me, we're going after them. But instead, you know, you get this just rambly speech at the RNC and about how, you know, thank God I'm here, which, you know, that's fine. But at the same time, you got to let your base know, hey, I'm here for you and we're going after them and we're not going to stop until the left is done. The, you know, corporate left is done. The weaponization is done. Until they say truce, we're not going to stop. But that's not Trump. Trump is just kind of, you know, wading through. He's just waiting until November when hopefully he gets a win, if he gets a win. And then, you know, who knows from there?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing is a lot of people jockeying for position for post-Trump. Yes. So I think that's part. Nick has not said that, so I just want to make sure it's clear. This is my opinion, that this is about taking over after Trump, you know, evolving the movement. Nick has kind of softening his message. After Elon brought him back, Nick has said this part. After Elon brought him back on X, he wants his message to be more palatable. He's flat out said that. And he's thinking about, he's only like 25 or 26. So he's thinking about when he progressing to potentially running for president. And if you don't believe me, Tucker Carlson took a little sneak diss at him. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
It was, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. So on X, Tucker said there's two people that were there that day in January that called for people to move forward. And one of them was Nick and one of them was Ray. He, I don't think he said the names. I listened to about half the podcast. I don't know where it happened. I didn't hear it, or maybe I missed it in the podcast. I just heard the clip. But so Tucker was, and he didn't name Nick, which means a lot to me. That's some old, like, you're going to talk about me, talk about me. Like, don't play these games. Why did Tucker do that? Tucker could be a potential presidential candidate and know that Nick could be going at him. That's jockeying for position. And Tucker's cool with Peter Thiel and J.D. Vance and them. So he could be a J.D. Vance president and Tucker VP or whatever they're looking to do.
Right.
And Nick's trying to jockey for position. DeSantis is trying to jockey for position. Well, DeSantis is going to say, if Trump loses, the day after, DeSantis could be like, this MAGA stuff, it's all over. It's done. He lost in 2020. The midterms were bad. 2024, it's a wrap. So he doesn't have to deal with a Carrie Lake and a Matt Gaetz.
Yeah.
If Trump wins, DeSantis doesn't have a good chance going forward. Nick might, Tucker might, but DeSantis doesn't. So you see all the chess pieces moving, but that's where I care about. I care about the future of that. More than even Trump, to be honest with you. I have to care about the future after Trump. And we're setting the stage. Nick's setting the stage of, this is what we expect, or you're going to get some heat. Nick has some power with a large following.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to ask you about as we're kind of nearing the end here was the whole PayPal mafia. So basically your guys, Mark Andreessen, Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, and all these guys kind of throwing their weight behind Trump. The way that this has been posited to me, and I know you had a conversation with my buddy Pete Quinones, who's a very, very good friend of mine. Love that dude.
Dearly. Oh, wow. Good.
Yeah. They've all kind of posited that the PayPal mafia is backing Trump under the guise that he's going to take down the administrative state. To me, it sounds a little bodacious. It sounds like I don't think Trump is that much of a bold guy to take on something like that, even if he has all these people backing him. And I don't think he has any kind of guiding ideology. I think he just kind of goes and does what he wants. And then his instincts on war are generally right. But what do you think about the PayPal mafia situation? Are you hopeful, or do you think it's just going to kind of be a drop in the bucket?
No, I'm not hopeful about them. And I think what their postures, they're trying to posture, they're part of this battle. And to me, I look at all of them as basically tech, they're tech guys. Yes. They're not really, I don't think they really have an ideology. Like J.D. Vance, what's J.D. Vance's ideology? He's definitely not MAGA, or maybe I guess you could. I don't know what his ideology is. You know, like, what is your philosophy? And I guess a conservative? I don't even know what that means. These tech guys, and Elon is the perfect representative of all of those tech guys. Elon Musk is not very knowledgeable in civics. He's very moderate. He is a textbook moderate, meaning he'll kind of weasel his way into whatever position he wants as long as it's not the extremes. So those guys are trying to funnel people through tech into this world where it's almost like, you know, back in the 90s where we felt like we were a country, but the only reason we were is because we didn't have the knowledge in the palm of our hands to look stuff up in 2 seconds. Right. Yeah. That's what they want to take us back to, and they all have their different interests. Peter Thiel is Palantir. He's got his defense stuff. He doesn't want the CIA and them to dominate him. Elon Musk got the same problem with SpaceX. I don't want the CIA, the deep state, to dominate me. I want to get to Mars. Peter Thiel, I don't follow him as much. He wants to do his thing. But they're not friends of the movement at all, to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little conflicted. Like I said, I've heard a lot of reports that, you know, this is going to be really, really good. But it always comes back to that little country in the Middle East, because I know Peter Thiel is a very, very big Zionist. And one of his goals was, like, you know, pre-crime. And then my biggest fear for a Trump administration, you know, maybe this will work for a good question for you, would be, or do we get some kind of giant spying apparatus through Palantir that's a privatized, quote unquote, privatized company that basically monitors you for pre-crime? And then also, you know, we can't forget that there are 38 states in the U.S. that have speech laws about Israel. If you criticize Israel, you have to sign a pledge if you work for the government that you won't criticize Israel. My biggest concern with the next administration, if it is a Trump administration, being such fervent Zionists, could we see some kind of spying apparatus that will throw you in jail if you criticize a certain country over there? I don't think it's ridiculous to say that we could have something like that, especially with people with an ideology like this. So, I guess with all that, what are your thoughts on that? And are you hopeful or pessimistic about the next Trump administration then, if that's to be the case?
Well, it depends on how things play out here.
Sure.
If we can kind of guide Trump, it's still possible. As of right now, I'm not hopeful. So he's going to have to change some things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's absolutely possible. Trump signed an executive order when he was president that anti-Semitism was not allowed on college campuses. Mm-hmm. So of course, Peter Thiel, if Trump wins, Peter Thiel is going to be like, I set you up with J.D. Vance. He obviously helped you win, despite all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And Trump had been begging for money for him forever.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Trump really needed it, but Trump was just like, why aren't you giving me 10 mil or so? You know what I mean? It's almost like everybody else throwing money at me, and he was not. I think he was wasn't he DeSantis at one point?
Thiel?
Peter? Yeah, or no?
He might have been. I'm pretty sure he's always been. He donates to a lot of Republicans, though, a lot.
But I know for a while he was not giving Trump any money. He was like, I'm not in this right now. And then he backed J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance is a good debater. He holds his own. He's a good presentation. And now Trump's like, okay, I got J.D. Vance. I got Peter on my side. You're going to, of course he's going to say, well, yeah, it's anti-Semitism. That's why I was so pissed off at this. It was unconstitutional when Elise Stefanik brought in the presidents of a private schools to tell them how they should do their free speech laws. They can have whatever law and free speech they want.
Yeah,
and Congress,
template.
Yeah. So I don't want to scare people for that, but of course that could happen.
Yeah. I hate to sound alarmist, but I mean, this shit's kind of a big deal, man. And this is what I'm really, really worried about, especially for guys who, you know, I think are in our corner more of like, you know, the right wing conservative corner who are critical of that little country over there. I don't want to see our guys be next. And especially when they're cheering on cancel culture, look, I get it. It feels good to finally feel vengeance and see leftists get, you know, either eat their own or to finally have power over them. But like, once again, be very, very wary, because that sword does come back to swing at you. Somebody sent you a super chat if you want to read that.
Oh, Mike has bad knees. Great friend of the show. Appreciate you pulling that up. Says, if tech is the inevitable future, I would rather it be Peter Thiel's and Elon Musk's versus Gates and Zuckerberg's. I agree. So what do you think?
The only thing that I would push back on is that actually in 2020, I think it was, Trump actually got some advice on the whole stabby wabby situation from Bill Gates. And then Zuckerberg is kind of starting to back Trump. So This is what I mean. I don't think people understand. Trump's kind of become the GOP establishment now at this point. And that's, you can have a debate as whether that's, you know, better or worse. I think it's better than the previous, but there are new problems with that. And my problem is that a lot of people generally still look at Trump as like the 2016 Trump rather than saying, oh, well, now he's an insider. He's the establishment and everybody needs his blessing generally to win. So what problems does that present now? Right. And I don't think people generally look at it that way.
Yeah. It's a complicated topic for me because I actually,
of course,
have been a great fan of his. Tesla's, I think, the best American company that's ever been made. I'm a huge fan of his business and engineering.
I'm a big EV guy too. I'm a General Motors guy. Listen, yeah. I've driven the Hummer, the electric Hummers. I'm absolutely enamored with them. But I'm sorry to interrupt. But yeah, no, I do dig the EV stuff. And Elon, what he's done is fantastic as far as buying X and then the electric vehicles. But yeah.
Yeah, so there's positives and negatives. That GM EV, I believe, is it 9,000 pounds? It's a heavy thing.
So the Hummer is one of the coolest things that GM's ever made. I mean, like I said, I'm absolutely enamored with it. To drive a 9,000-pound Hummer, it is every bit as big as old H2, with a 0 to 60 of about 3 seconds, and it has a mode specifically called Watts to Freedom where you could just do fucking burnouts in it, crab walk. I mean, mm-hmm. I took this thing on a course because we went to a sales course, and we're on like 20-30% grates. It feels like you're about to fall out of it. You're facing like directly down on a hill and it just holds. I mean, they are impressive fucking machines. I'm an EV guy. People can knock them all they like, but listen, once you drive one of those, you'll be a believer in a heartbeat. I promise you.
Okay, well, I gotta get this before we go to the last topic real quick. What do you think about the Cybertruck then?
Listen, I'm just saying the Hummer blows the doors off at 10 times out of 10. Yeah, so I mean, I've never driven the Tesla Cybertruck. Mm-hmm. I do like them sort of because the EV stuff, it does interest me, and I am hybrid certified, so I know how to work on hybrids and all that. Oh, wow. But like the Cadillac Lyric, which is the Cadillac SUV, mm-hmm. really, really cool as well. Very, very sharp car, drives nice, beautiful interior. But the Hummer EV is where it's at, man. And we also drove the EV Sierras. Those pull no problem. Basically, like the rule is if you're at 50% of the total towing capacity, you get 50% of the range. So if the range is 400 miles and the towing capacity is 7,000 pounds, which I think that's pretty close, you get 200 miles of range if you're towing 3,500 pounds. So they'll still pull whatever, and they are pretty nice on the inside. But, you know, if you're towing something, you're probably going to want something for gas. But like EV is the way of the future, and I'm not completely leaning away from it. I think if people start driving them, especially the EV Hummer, I mean, you just cannot not just be blown away with a 9,000-pound vehicle that goes 0 to 60 in fucking 3 seconds. It's awesome.
Really cool tech. I'm a tech guy. I've never been a car guy, like a nuts and bolts, like you, car guy.
Yeah.
And I like it. It's like a golf cart, but it's, you know, so there's really no maintenance with it. The one thing I'm noticing, though, is that Tesla's the only one that's, to my knowledge, making profit off of these. The GMC, they're losing tons of money.
Oh, yeah. Ford and GM are getting burned. I mean, if I remember correctly, they're losing like billions per quarter. They're losing their asses on these things. But I mean, they're awesome. The GM ones are fucking awesome. I don't know about the Fords. I mean, I sat in the Ford F-150, not the Lightning, whatever their EV F-150 is. The interior is nicer on that than the EV Sierra, which isn't out yet. Mm-hmm. But I'm still partial to the EV Hummer. The EV Hummer is the coolest electric vehicle ever made.
Wow. Good to hear. But I wanted to hear your take on, because you know libertarian stuff, and I was a huge admirer. I still am. Let me not say was, like they're not around anymore. Michael Heiss, Dave Smith, Robbie the Fire Bernstein, Eric July, and everybody in that, Angela McCardle and Michael Malice, and I'm just naming names. Man, I hope it doesn't derail the movement of the Mises Caucus. Where are we at?
I love all those guys dearly. And if you go back through my channel, I did two shows with Angela on, you know, the Libertarian Party versus the Republican Party strategy, which, and for the Republican Party one, I added some cool names on that. So, I've had good standing relationships with all those people. Maybe some of those people don't really like me anymore, and that's okay. I can tell you that after the show. But for the most part, all those people I'm good friends with, and you know, love those people dearly. Angela, I really, really like Angela. She's great. I think the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus kind of lost some momentum once Dave kind of pulled out of the run. And you know, a lot of respect for Dave. I consider Dave a friend, and you know, he's welcome back on the show anytime. But I think him kind of waffling his presidency deal, I think that kind of took a lot of the wind out of the sails, because a lot of people were under the impression that, hey, we're doing this, we're taking over the Libertarian Party under the explicit purpose of Dave Smith running for president. And then when the time finally came in May of 2022, I think it was, they had about 5 or 6 months where just nothing was going on. And that was the time that it took Dave to decide that he wasn't going to do it, which, once again, no problems with that. But I mean, if you're not going to do it, dude, you got to kind of shit or get off the pot and let everybody know that, like, this, you know, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And then get somebody in there like Rechtenwald, who, let's face it, he was a consolation prize, and he really wasn't that great of a candidate, really not that great of a speaker, good on the issues, but just boring as sin. Like the dude personally, but you know, just wasn't a great replacement for Dave. If I'm being honest, the Libertarian Party doesn't look that good after this whole situation.
Wow.
I threw out a tweet in early 2023, or it might even been 2022. I'll see if I can find it. But I said, if Chase Oliver is the nominee for the Libertarian Party, then the Mises Caucus takeover had failed. And that was way before I even really thought that this could happen, and it did. So I watched it live.
They live streamed it. It was one of the more shocking things, because it was like a, it was something where there was a no, still there? Oh, shoot. Dropped off? Did we drop? Let me know in the comments if you're still on, if we're still on. Still on? It might have been my internet. Let me see if my internet's not working. No, it is working.
Oh, my bad.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I got you.
Okay, is my camera on my screen?
Camera's off. We're still there. Okay, I'm just talking to myself. People probably think I'm crazy. I didn't know if it was my internet or not, but...
No, I think that was me. I don't know what the hell is going on. I'm not sure what my camera's
on. But I can hear you, though.
Okay, good. Basically, I think because of the Mises Caucus not really having the wind in their sails, so to speak, I think that kind of cost them a lot of momentum, and unfortunately that kind of, you know, sank the movement, so to speak, which is heartbreaking, because like I said, I love all these people. They're phenomenal people. They know what they're doing, and kind of, I think, are the right people to kind of spearhead the Liberty movement. But unfortunately, I think after Dave Smith decided not to run, I think that kind of took a lot of the winds out of the sails, and now we're kind of, you know, the Libertarian Party may be dead in the water. So that's kind of my take about that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, the first thought I have to that is I want, you know, Dave to do the best for him and his family. He has two little kids now. I think he has two kids now. That's priority number one. And I almost feel bad because I put the post up in 2021. I'm voting for Dave Smith. And he never said he wanted to be president. Well, he was hinting at it a little bit, but I feel like people kind of pushed him into that position. And that's dangerous. There's a lot going on with being president, man, like vetting and all. So I don't blame him at all. I think that they can recover it. This is a blip. This is definitely a blip in the road, a serious blip. And it shows that you need depth strength. You need bench strength. And Clint should have been the one, is the only one that I'm aware of, that because he was going to run for VP. I mean, why not go for president?
Yeah,
he ran for VP. So Clint is the one, and then now you got to get your bench. Who's after Clint? And get the people in the right. Dr. Rechtenwald seems like a great man. He should be behind the scenes doing stuff.
Yeah.
Not a front man or anything like that. But they can get that movement back. But when that fell apart, that pushed me closer to Nick. So I'm like on the libertarian side. I'm here for the best answer, best movement. And Mises Caucus, I thought it was going to be it, but Nick is taking it, because people don't really want, you know, the other thing is people don't want liberty. Even the libertarians don't want liberty. They want comfort. That's what the rainbow flag and all that stuff is. Chase has some good positions, but
absolutely,
he has some centralized power positions, and I think people that makes people comfortable. So even though I like Liberty, I've been kind of pushed to. Nick is an authoritarian, hardcore. So that's where we're at. But I wish them the best. And I'll end with this: is they have to take over ruthlessly, politically, peacefully, ruthlessly in politics, root out all that Chase Oliver stuff, just like they rooted out the corporate stuff. The Chase Oliver wing, the left wing of the Libertarian Party, there's a lot of race in that too. There's people who are real race heavy on that side. They're identity focused. Obviously, Chase is a rainbow guy. They got to get the hell up out of here. That has no place with Liberty. None. Get the hell up out of the party. And I think they'll be all right.
Yeah. Well, let's definitely hope so. Osiris, this was an absolutely fantastic conversation, man. And I appreciate would love you. To do it again sometime. I took some notes for some of the people that you mentioned, because if these people are in leagues with you, then I definitely think they should. I got to reach out to some of those.
I'm going to hit you up. There are so many great creators that it's just, I like following it. I'll let you know. See who you can hook up with.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I have a pretty open door policy. I've had so many different names, voices, people on the show, people from far left communists all the way to, you know, hard right authoritarians. I've loved for people of any walk of life who's willing to have a conversation. So let everybody know where they can find you, support you, all that good stuff, man. And let's definitely do this again.
Yeah, we'll do it again. Absolutely. The best place, let's go to middlemaga.com. I put up articles. I put up videos on the website, and sub up. I appreciate you. Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah, of course. All right. Well, and for everybody on Middle Magus channel, Osiris's, Komatovic and Liberty and Health, A Common Crown. I do a couple other podcasts. You could find me mainly on Twitter at Komatovic, which is spelled out below, MATOVCIK. Thanks so much, man, for coming on, and let's do it again soon.
All right. Peace.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.